This recording is from FinTech Nexus USA, formerly known as London FinTech USA, held at the Javits Center in New York City on May 25th to 26, 2022. It's from the track FinTech in 2027, sponsored by MasterCard and is titled Innovations in Lending Tech, Preparing for the Future in a Constantly Evolving Lending Ecosystem. Speaking on the session are Amin Dalla from MasterCard, Lisa Kimball from Finicity, Kurt Weiss from Ekata, with moderator Raymond Pucci from IDC Financial Insight.
Welcome, everyone. Great to see the Javits Center back in action. Great to be here. And today's session is Innovations in Lending Tech, Preparing for the Future in a Constantly Evolving Lending Ecosystem. We have a very dynamic panel here representing MasterCard and varying organizations. We have Lisa Kimball, SVP Product for Open Banking at Finicity, Amin Dalla, Chief Product Officer at Brighterion, and Kurt Weiss, Director of Financial Services at Ekata. And as John mentioned, I'm Raymond Pucci, Research Director of Digital Lending at IDC. As many of you know, MasterCard has made a number of acquisitions in recent years, and the panelists that we have here today are from those organizations, as we mentioned, Finicity, Brighterion, and Ekata. So I think this is really an excellent opportunity to hear these various MasterCard divisions, how they come together and solve lender and borrower pain points. I'm going to ask each panelist to give a brief intro to themselves and an overview of their organization. And we'll start with Lisa Kimball at Finicity.
Thank you. My name is Lisa Kimball. I'm the Senior Vice President of Credit Services at Finicity, and I've been working in open banking for almost 5 years now. I get really excited and passionate about the way that we can use technology to expand access to different types of payments, as well as to expand credit access. And the part where we get to do that all by enabling consumers and small business is icing on the cake. Finicity joined the MasterCard family in 2020 as an open banking network, again, empowering consumers to leverage their financial data. And so that's how we got to be part of this great MasterCard family.
Thanks, Lisa. Amin Dalla.
Hi, everyone. My name is Amin Dalla. I'm the Chief Product Officer for Brighterion. My team develops AI products from a risk and credit risk and fraud perspective. Specifically with respect to credit risk, we're working with banks globally to enable them better manage credit risk and improve the customer experience. Just a little bit about Brighterion. It has been an AI company for over 20 years now. We were acquired by MasterCard about 4 or 5 years back. And we pretty much form the security fabric of MasterCard's network. So wherever you make a payment, be it at the Starbucks here in the Javits Center, or you're entering in a tube in London, or making a transaction online, all those transactions are scored by Brighterion's AI models embedded on the MasterCard network, providing enhanced security and a pleasant customer experience. So happy to be here today.
Thanks, Amin. Kurt Weiss at Ekata, a brief introduction.
Hi, Kurt Weiss. I lead the financial services team at Ekata. You may know us formerly as White Pages Pro, but most recently we were acquired by MasterCard about a year ago, one of the global leaders in identity verification, focused around the elements that build up a digital identity. So name, phone, email, address, and IP. And really trying to use those elements to better inform decisions. And like one of the reasons we're so excited about a conference like this is there's so much tech, there's so many new tools that can be used at onboarding. And I think we all probably like to talk about layers at some point in our day of security and trust, and using the data that we have to sort of help inform and optimize how those decisions, how those tools are being leveraged is a really exciting space because there's always something new. And that's kind of where we fit into to this as the newest member of the MasterCard family.
Thanks very much, Kurt. We'll ask each panelist some questions and hear their responses. And as John mentioned, we'll allow 5 or 10 minutes at the end of the session for questions from the audience. We'd be happy to entertain any of your questions. Let's start with Lisa from Finicity. We've been talking about the need to streamline the operating process and reduce expenses in the credit decisioning lifecycle for quite a long time now. Open banking now has promised a better consumer experience. What are end users looking for in this case?
You know, I think we can really look at other industries to see what end users are looking for. And certainly over the last couple of years, just a great expansion in what I think about as right here, right now mindset. So what that means is that while I'm at waiting for kids' soccer practice to finish, I went online and ordered groceries, and I'm looking for those groceries to be at the house before I get there. We've seen that kind of a mindset expand into the payment space already where, you know, again, like I'm at dinner with friends. I want to pay my part of my dinner bill by a direct peer-to-peer quick transaction. And increasingly, we're seeing the same desire for from users when they're looking for credit products. So they want to be able to safely and securely permission the access and use of their data for that specific use case and have it turned around quickly. So I get really excited about the part where, you know, kind of all these things come together. So think about the situation where someone can, again, permission data use for a credit decision, maybe get access to credit that they couldn't through traditional methods, and then very easily also elect in to leverage that same set of account information to make that the account that they make payment on that particular loan for. So we essentially have credit decisioning, payments, enablement, and financial management all rolled into one in a way that's very easy and streamlined and transparent for users.
Thanks, Lisa. I think that's something we'll all agree with, not having to wait in line and streamlining the process, certainly. Amin, we're looking at what's happening around us right now, some of the current circumstances, interest rate hikes, COVID, which have had an impact on the credit risk management across the globe and on the consumer experience. So what can you say regarding to the current circumstances we've seen in the last year or two?
Yeah, so just given the increase in debt, household debt, the increase in delinquencies, which trend which you're seeing, as well as, you know, obviously the interest rate rates we've gone through right now and which are looming ahead of us, it is imperative for banks to effectively manage credit risk and at the same point of time improve the customer experience. And this is where banks are looking towards technologies such as machine learning so that they can achieve this twinfold objective of, you know, improving, mitigating the credit risk, and at the same point of time, improving the customer experience. And this is something which we are hearing from banks and lenders who we speak to globally across segments, be it consumer, small business, across tiers as well, you know, be it with banks who have hundreds of billions of dollars in assets to even credit unions. So it's across. And we find that banks, as part of research, you know, they are looking to, which we've done is that banking executives are partaking in keeping a certain proportion of the investments to invest in machine learning for credit risk. So coming on to where is machine learning being applied across the credit risk lifecycle, we are seeing it being applied across in terms of origination, in terms of portfolio optimization, as well as collections optimization as well. So if you kind of break it down from an origination perspective, yet a core objective is how do you actually accurately assess the credit risk of a customer, going back to what Lisa said, ensuring that streamlined experience, because customers are getting that experience from other verticals, so why not from fintech, right? So there's that aspect. And, you know, you want to provide that streamlined experience, of course, to as you cross-sell to your existing customers, but also, importantly, or probably even more, to customers who are new to enterprise as well. Moving on to once customers are onboarded, going on to second stage in terms of portfolio optimization, This is where the core objective is in terms of assessing if, you know, customers are going to become delinquent on their payments, and then appropriately taking credit risk strategies, for example, in terms of transaction approvals. I think there's a great opportunity out here for banks to actually provide a really positive experience to their cardholders, if you think about it, because it's pretty common for a customer to actually make 8 to 10 transactions on their card, and for them to get declined is a really bad experience due to false positives. And then lastly, you know, banks are also looking to, you know, streamline the collections operations as well. So as you can see, basically, you know, it's an environment of, you know, growing interest rates, Raymond, as you called out, in terms of, you know, growing delinquencies and, you know, banks increasingly looking to leverage machine learning across the life cycle. You know.
Curious, Raymond, do banks already have the data in order to power those models, or, and they're not sort of using it in a manner that really takes advantage of it, or is it also about bringing in new data sets?
That's a good question, Kurt. I think it's a combination of both. So we do have banks who already have the data at hand, and they are using it. There are those who have data and who are not using it. And then there's a third segment as well who are looking to get new data. So you find, you know, customers all across that particular, you know, continuum. So.
Right, and I think those are important points because it looks like we're going to be seeing continued interest rate hikes for a while now. So something to get into a new normal, it seems. Let's turn over to Kurt. Looking at traditional Know Your Customer KYC processes and systems may not be keeping up with consumer expectations, and then on the other hand, the ever-increasing sophistications of fraudsters.
Yeah, I think a lot of this comes down to sort of semantics and definitions, and you know, KYC, Know Your Customer, really doesn't stand up anymore when your customer is really now a digital identity. KYC doesn't traffic in things like email, your IP, your device, behavioral and network signatures that we can know about you. Those are all an ever-expanding realm of our digital identities. And there's so many companies that are now tracking, finding ways to kind of unearth that data, leverage it through models and other reasons to actually scope out and build trust around a digital identity. In the meantime, the processes that, you know, we traditionally have for knowing our customer and understanding who they are is pretty limited in scope. And that's, you know, it's a compliance check, right, at the end of the day. And so its scope is sort of mandated by what needs to be done there. But when we're talking about this customer experience side where folks have these new expectations of how they're going to be interacting with any business that they're transacting with, whether it's a bank or Amazon or your groceries, there's a trust that has to come through, right? That's part of that expectation of, you know, speed and having the groceries be there. And anytime you're asking someone, tell me again who you are, but can you demonstrate that, right? That's you as an institution saying right up front to the customer you've just finally brought in through your marketing channels that we don't actually trust you right now. And so I think one of the really big trends we're starting to see that's really hopeful is you've got to be able to bring all these pieces together. And we've started to see a lot of new titles and roles show up at the institutions we work with, like head of digital onboarding or head of digital identity, where there's a much more holistic understanding of what that customer experience needs to be and how to balance all of these pieces from credit to KYC to identity to fraud. And we often see those as really siloed steps, each with their own level of trust and mistrust and questions that are going to be asked, data is that going to be sought after. And so it's really, really important to take a focus and say, okay, like these are things that as the bank, as the institution, like we need to cover. But for the customer that we're bringing on board, this is all one process. They're not concerned with your credit check. They're not concerned with your KYC check or your fraud check. They're just looking at that screen that asked them to sort of do the initial application. And presumably when they hit submit, they're going to have the desired product. Ideally, it's at home before the end of soccer practice. And so that really takes a new lens and new information. And that's what sort of we most enjoy talking about with customers. Again, there's decision intelligence that needs to be employed. There's so much you can learn from those basic pieces of identity that folks are very comfortable providing. Name, phone, email, address, IP is always in the background. Those are pretty stock. How much can you learn from that? How much trust can you gain to augment those decisions and questions you have to ask downstream and make sure it feels like one experience that is tailored to the trust you can impart on that consumer before you ask them to trust you?
Yeah, no doubt consumers are looking for, I think the watchwords are convenience and immediacy. A consumer, whether as a borrower or as a buyer, they want a streamlined process. And if it's unsatisfactory, if it's taking too long, they'll just move on, you know, check out abandonment or go to another lender, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I always try to explain that sort of mentality. You know, everyone's got some screen at some point that's got like 80 tabs up. It's so easy for customers to have, you know, 10 different tabs up that are all accessing a product that is either identical or very similar to the product you offer. And so it's not a matter of closing out a bank account, driving to the next bank anymore. It's just closing one tab, popping over to the next one. Chances are Chrome is going to autofill all that information for you that I was talking about previously. So the choice, the decision is all on the consumer side, and it's never been easier for them. Unless we're still making it hard. And then that makes the choice to abandon pretty easy for them.
I think the attention span is hardly like 10, 15 seconds. That's your margin of error max. You know,
so. I think I'm at 17.
I think in addition to the attention span, there's that confidence that the organization you're working with understands what they're doing well enough to secure and know your digital identity. So when we ask the same questions repeatedly, that confidence from the consumer is really eroded.
I think that's one of the nice things about the sort of open banking products that are out there today, like Finicity, where my trust is with this bank that I already have, and I can kind of use that to access different points, but that trust is already there. They're representing my trust with that institution. And again, it's just minimizing the amount of challenges, the amount of things we have to ask these customers. And I really go back to, you know, some of those new titles, those new work streams where people are imagining this in a much more holistic way, trying to keep away from the traditional silos that we've had and view it as a single experience, not just through onboarding, but then carrying on through sort of the continuous validation and account changes.
Very good. Excellent. Lisa, let's look at some open finance issues right now. We've seen data-powered innovations and data ownership as an important part this year. And what are some of the challenges and impediments, though, to utilizing open finance data effectively?
I think one of the biggest challenges around using open finance data and transactional data has to do with the lack of standardization across data sources and across the industry as a whole. So I think that, you know, we've really made a lot of investments at Finicity around data normalization. I think that's really critical, just understanding that the same transaction could look very different as it comes from a particular type of connectivity to a financial institution, and definitely looks different from financial institution to financial institution. So we've made a lot of investment around data normalization We think that our clients deserve and expect that kind of standardized data. And that's really also led us to elect in and really advocate that in this space, it's important that we follow the FCRA and the have held ourselves out as a credit reporting agency, because that enhancement of the data and normalization of the data is so critical. And we think that in order to do that, to do what clients are expecting, we also need to make sure that consumers are able to have visibility into the ways that their data was summarized and translated, and then can impact that as needed. So I just, again, think that like that standardization, getting to industry norms around that is really important, and then being able to give the transparency across the board is critical.
And that's often the key challenge which we face in terms of the machine learning, you know, engagements and models we build, is just getting access to that standardized data as well. So.
Thanks. Amin, you were referring earlier and just now machine learning and also AI. So how are financial institutions leveraging AI solutions across consumer credit risk?
Yeah, so, you know, I'll just touch on some core themes out here in terms of what, you know, where we're collaborating with banks and lenders across the life cycle. I think that from a portfolio optimization perspective, this is where, you know, banks are looking to identify which customers are likely to become delinquent and then, you know, take appropriate credit strategies out there. And based on a work which we have done with banks, we've been able to kind of identify preemptive credit losses of up to like $40, $50 million in some instances. Now, the key metric out here is to look at incremental delinquency detection, which you can generate via your machine learning models versus, you know, what is existing out there. So that's the core metric. And the other aspect is that it's got to be done without impacting the customer experience, because that is key. And frankly, I think all of this is fine. You can have the best of models operating, but speed and your ability to predict that well ahead of time is crucial. So if you're able to predict, let's say, 60, 70 days ahead of a customer becoming delinquent, then more power to you. And in that particular case, it gives the bank the opportunity to interact with digital customers, of course, across several interactions through their mobile banking experience. But at the same point of time, it also gives you know, the opportunity to interact with customers who are non-digital via statements as well. There's the other aspect in terms of collections optimization, and this is where what we found as a theme is also banks looking to leverage some of their card payment transaction data to actually, you know, predict if customers are actually going to sustain the delinquency or they're going to eventually charge off. And this is where we've actually built models which help enable banks to achieve that objective. But if you kind of bring it back, that achieves like two or three core objectives. One is you have more positive customer experience, because if customers are already going to self-cure, then that's great. You don't need to message to those customers. Secondly, you know, obviously there's impact from a profitability perspective, because you can streamline your operations. But if you think about it, just having and using, you know, payment transaction data, if you're a top of wallet customer, you use your card 5 or 6 times a month, it means that you're getting the signals every 4 or 5 days. So that just helps the banks react much faster and get a much more accurate picture much more quickly.
Thanks, Amin. Kurt, let's take a look at the underbanked consumer issue. There are some statistics that show that maybe upwards of 2 billion people globally are un or underbanked. And in the U.S., it can reach perhaps up to 20% of all consumers don't have bank accounts or very very thin on their banking. Kurt, so how can lenders confidently differentiate between these thin-file customers and weighed against what we're seeing is synthetic identity from the fraudsters?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is obviously a really big question for this conference. Thin file is sort of the dream of fintech. That's kind of what we're all here trying to approach. And I think it goes hand in hand with you know, that concept of sort of broadening our scope and understanding of what identity is. And we look at things, you know, in some of their traditional silos. So much of the data that is traditionally used for, you know, not just credit, but like things like KYC and sort of, you know, early identity verification is effectively credit header driven data. That's where so much of that is coming from. And so if I'm that thin file customer who obviously I haven't developed that credit header yet, I don't have data with those bureaus, that won't trickle down into some of the risk products that are traditionally being used today. And so I'm challenged not just in terms of the lack of credit I may have, I'm challenged in terms of how well banks can understand and trust my identity. In the meantime, again, while they may not have interacted with the financial services system, they still have a digital identity, right? They have phones, they're making transactions, and they're using those components of that identity and developing it elsewhere. And so that's really big for, you know, companies like ourselves at Ekata, being not just global, but broad in the scope of companies we work with, because it's not just about, okay, the number of transactions and account openings I'm doing with different banks, and maybe I have a checking account here and a savings account there, starting to build up that network. I'm also using that phone and that email and often very similar IP addresses and the like when I'm opening an account with Airbnb, if I'm going on a dating app, taking a Lyft or an Uber, if I'm shopping at Amazon, AT&T, wherever it may be, for a new phone, for clothes, for shoes, I'm leaving a digital signature. I'm leaving a footprint of my identity. And so much of solving this problem is going to come from being able to understand the scope so that even as some of the sort of traditional silos around KYC or around credit may say, hey, like, we just don't know who this individual is, there are so many ways we have now to actually take that feedback and go, okay, that makes sense. However, I know that this is a legitimate identity. I understand that the person hitting submit is very likely the owner of this identity. And I know they transact, and this is legitimate in every other space. So I need to flip my mentality again towards that trust. And instead of asking and challenging, what are the different pathways I can provide, now knowing like, oh, that's actually the target customer. We just spent a lot of marketing dollars to bring this person to our website. You know, our tried and true, hey, upload these documents or, you know, go to a bank branch. That might not be the experience we want for them. And so again, you've got to take that into account. And on the synthetic identity side, this is such a complication here because these were made to prey on some of those traditional data sets that don't look at this and don't take some of these other accounts in. So I always look at this problem and I go, man, we're just set up to, you know, say no to all of these customers who are coming in thin file that we're actually targeting. And then these fraudsters who have built these composite identities to purposely get through some of these checks that rely on address and social and date of birth, they're getting right in. We've got to really flip that. And when you start understanding the scope of those digital identities, I think what is really great and exciting about the information out there is it's actionable on both ends of that spectrum. It's not just about targeting and kicking fraud out. It's also really good at identifying, oh, like that person has been using that email and that phone number for the last 15 years. And we've seen it with a number of email IP addresses because that's how this works. But it's within the area that we believe they live. We've seen them with a few different addresses here. All of that can go in to inform you of that legitimacy, not just pointing out that, hey, actually, that's a brand new email. Good sign, right? That's a really weird IP address to be associated with some of this other information. We can start spotting that synthetic fraud. that reverse of it and being able to identify those good customers is so, so important that we not lose sight of. But so much of what we have set up today is unfortunately like, we're going to block good, we're going to harness the bad, we want to flip that around.
Thanks, Kurt. Let's work in a few more brief questions for the panel, and I'd ask the audience to be thinking about some questions of their own. In about 5 minutes, we'll start our Q&A from the audience. But let's have some brief comments from our panel. Starting with Lisa, we've talked about fraud management and the issues with authentication and verification and so on. So what's the challenge of balancing which are competing objectives of increasing data access, but at the same time, protecting privacy and safeguarding security?
Yeah, I mean, that's really a challenge that's at the core of open banking. And it's something that, you know, we think about daily. So it's important to minimize the amount of user friction. Kurt's brought up a number of ways and things to think about in that context. But of course, the data security is table stakes, right? We can't lose sight of that. So there's some interesting things, I think, that are going on. An increased prevalence of direct API connectivity into those financial institutions, leveraging the bank generated security, a lot of movement around tokenized access to data sources. Those will both be, I think, really important going forward. And in any case, these are all better than some of the manual methods of data collection that we've been used to seeing, like sending an email, handing documents out somewhere. I was asked to fax some things a couple of months ago in my last loan process. So, a lot of movement, but I think a lot of opportunities to do much better if we're willing to think a little bit differently about it. And then the last thing that I think is really critical around the security element here is transparency back to the end user. So if you think about the difference between me faxing my bank statement to a number, and let's say I get the fax number wrong, right? I send it to an incorrect place. I won't know until somebody says, hey, we didn't receive what you sent. Versus through a lot of the digital methods where I immediately get a notification, I can confirm what's been sent, I can see what the data is. There's just a lot more security that can be obtained also through providing that transparency back to the end user.
Thanks, Lisa. And Amin, a quick response, and we'll be in a moment or two asking the audience for questions. But give us a brief response, Amin, on something. What can financial institutions expect as incremental benefits using AI? What's the ROI that you can say a few words about?
Yeah, so, banks and lenders already have, existing models out there which they use. I mean, it's inherent to the business, the risk, they got to manage it, and they got to grow profitability while meeting consumer needs. What we've seen is that banks can get up to like 35% incremental delinquency detection by using models. I think it comes down to three or four core areas. First is what is the modeling technology in place, how is the new technology being brought on superior? And this is where the more you're able to provide a more personalized view into every specific account, you're able to provide much better results out there. Secondly, there is the whole aspect of getting a view of consumer permission data across the organization. So obviously looking for, a solution which actually gives you, which is able to ingest and provide that overarching view, deriving intelligence of data from across an organization. And lastly, it's a different aspect totally in terms of going ahead and building these models like in a lab kind of a framework, but then actually going ahead and deploying it in production, doing this for hundreds of millions of events is a different ballgame altogether. So for that, you should be looking for, providers which actually help, check off that particular box as well.
Thanks, Amin. And thanks to the panel for some excellent comments and some great insight in what's going on in lending tech right now. We have 5 minutes remaining in our session, so how about we have a little participation from the audience, and either using the QR code on the screen, or we have a mobile mic here in the audience. Is there a question right there?
Hi. Is there any specific use case that you have done on machine learning for pricing, right? So,
is your mic on? I think I've just, because this is being
recorded. Question was, is there a specific use case that's been done with machine learning for pricing?
Yeah, guessing that's that's the right question.
Yeah.
Actually, what we've actually seen more of a focus on is in terms of determining the credit risk is what most of the banks and lenders have been focused on. They then take that as an input and then they embed it into other models which they have to determine pricing. So, but that's we've seen some interest coming in that particular regard, but mostly it's been focused purely on credit risk.
Thank you. Yes, right there.
I'm coming from a completely different direction. I am 50, unfortunately. My son is 19, fortunately. He just got his first internship, and he got a bank account, and he's asking me, the basics. Sometimes I find it's refreshing to get yourself out of a slumber by speaking with somebody between 19 and 21. They tell you as it is, and they ask you questions that you thought, that's interesting. I asked myself that question once before, but I sort of decided there are rules, don't ask them anymore. So he's asking me, how do I get a credit card? I'm like, well, these are the steps. Well, who would decide that I get the credit card? I explained to him the three agencies. He's like, well, why? What are they going to know about me? So I'm trying to have this conversation with him, and then he says, wait, why social security number? Didn't you tell me social security is about retiring? I'm not retiring anytime soon. I'm like, yeah, you're right. And mom, didn't they say you have to have like 8 to 10 digits as your passcode? Why do they then ask for the last 4 digits of your social security? It's 4 digits. I can't change them. Can't they just then crack into everything I have? I'm like, yep. So I was just asking myself, 30 years ago, I came to US as an immigrant. I was thinking through all these things myself, and it seemed very constraining and very kind of, I don't know, like really illogical in a lot of ways, how we combine these things. 30 years later, my kid is an American. He didn't have to deal with, oh, I don't have a green card, this, that, and the other. He's American. There he is, 19-year-old. He's coming into this system, and he's like, Mom, you work in finance. What has actually changed? Like, what has actually changed that I can do that you couldn't?
Thank you. Kurt, do you want to answer that?
No.
Okay.
I think honestly, like, probably not enough on sort of the rails on which we're bringing customers in, and you have that customer experience, right? You've got chatbots and things along those lines. I think so much of the innovation has come on the back end in terms of the products available, the machine learning and things that are going into broadening the scope of credit. But yeah, I mean, again, we work in so many different vectors at Ekata, and you're signing up and getting access to a lot of products with an email. And financial services is still the only one where we actually see this full, complete set of information going all the way on down. So I think it's a really good point. I think it's, that customer experience is now shifting, but we've also been an industry that's dominated by a lot of large traditional things. It's conferences like this and the companies that are here that I think are starting to challenge and evolve that. We talked earlier about the competition. Like, I think that will start to drive some of it, but there's also a lot of regulation behind it.
Yeah, one more
I think
more
it's a bit of a journey, actually. Yeah, so it's a journey, and it's good that we have access to better data sets than before, better machine learning techniques. So I think we're on the journey. So,
yeah. One more very brief question.
Smart kid, though.
With the brief answer. Anyone? Okay. Brief question. Thank you, sir, right there.
So there's a lot of discussion about the consumer side, and there's sort of consumer, small business, and then commercial lending. small business, I think, is closer to the consumer side of the lending and how we identify and do that underwriting side of things. So what kind of initiatives are you guys doing to help small business identity for lenders like us, for example?
Thank you. Briefly?
We do a lot on that side because I think what we've seen, especially through COVID, is more and more micro merchants, sole proprietors. When it comes to that long tail, I think what folks are realizing is you really are underwriting the individual. And so, again, that goes back to just assessing the identity, trying to figure out, like, they're not going to have the same footprint that a traditional business is going to have anymore. They're going to be all digital. They might be on Etsy, things along these lines. So focusing on that individual, trying to ascertain their identity and their footprint rather than trying to weed out all of the documentation, text IDs, and stuff that would come from a larger, more static footprint.
Thank you. And thank you, Lisa, Amin, and Kurt. And thanks to everyone for attending today. Enjoy the rest of your day.